Alright, hi everybody, I'm Devin Biggerstaff. I'm from the Institute for Quantum Computing in Waterloo, and I work in Kevin Resch's research group there. And I'm going to be talking about the optical implementation of a POVM measurement for photonic cluster state quantum computing. And yes, in there I will get to the experimental results of our test of the thresholds that Nathan was talking about in the last talk. Collaborators are Terry Rudolph, Nathan, Reiner Kaltenbeck, Denny Hamel, and Kevin Resch. And they're all at IQC except for Terry, who's from England currently. Brief outline. So first I'm just going to review cluster state quantum computing and POVMs and talk about how POVMs can help in cluster state computing. Then I'm going to show you how I experimentally tested this idea, explain my apparatus, show you some results, and then talk about how this experiment can also be used as can also be viewed as remote state preparation, which was what Nathan was discussing, and I'll give you the results from that also. So first, brief review of cluster state quantum computing. Probably a lot of you already know this, but in the cluster state quantum computing, one way it's usually thought of is that you start with a bunch of qubits all initialized in the plus state. So I'm showing the cluster picture on the right here, and on the left I'm showing the more normal circuit picture. Then you entangle them by performing a controlled Z operation between neighboring qubits on your graph, and that gives you a resource called a cluster state. One important thing to note is that you don't actually have to make a cluster state by that process. You can make it however you want. Once you have that resource, you can do cluster state computing with it. Then the computation proceeds just by doing single qubit projective measurements. So you measure in bases that look like this, and which is the same as doing a rotation around the z-axis in a Hadamard, and then you feed forward. And you do that successively, and then the output of your cluster computation here would be the same as the output of this circuit here. And actually both those circuits are equivalent to this much simpler circuit. So there's just a couple things I really want you to note. One is that, especially in optics with photons, doing multiple qubit gates is hard. Single qubit gates is easy. Multiple qubit gates are hard. That's why the circuit model is difficult. The cluster state model makes that easier because once you have your cluster, you don't have to do any multiple qubit gates. You just have to do single qubit measurements. So now it moves the hard part to making a big cluster, making that big initial entangled resource. So POVMs can actually help with that, with making clusters bigger. And so I'll briefly explain how that works. So as you notice, the cluster model usually works with just simple projective measurements. I'll explain, you all know what a projective measurement is, but I'll explain it anyway. You have some qubit, say, in a system, or we'll call it S for system, and then you have some measurement device, and you pass the qubit through your measurement device, and then you either end up with a 0 or a 1 at the end of your measurement. It's pretty straightforward. A POVM is a little bit more complicated. The way it's usually thought of is that you have some system, and it's more general, so you can interact that system with some ancillary system or systems. And then you measure that larger Hilbert space, and you'll have more than two outcomes to your measurement. You'll have multiple outcomes, and because it's a larger Hilbert space. Now notice that your system qubit could, for instance, be part of a cluster. And your ancilla could be another cluster, and your interaction could be a controlled Z gate, so you have now a bigger cluster, and then your measurement could be measuring each of these qubits successively in different bases. That's just a cluster computation, but it can also all be viewed as a POVM on that system qubit. And actually, the important thing to note is that you don't, for the purposes of the cluster computation, it doesn't matter how you go about doing that POVM, whether or not you actually bring in all those physical ancilla qubits. You could just as easily do the POVM using other degrees of freedom of the qubit you already have. So for us in photonics, that makes it easier because making lots of entangled photons is hard, but photons have more than one degree of freedom that we can exploit to do these POVMs. So I'll explain how we... So quickly, I'm going to just give a couple more examples of how POVMs can help in cluster state quantum computing. So this here is called a 4-qubit box cluster, and it's pretty close to the biggest cluster actually experimentally achievable in optics. So we can't make very big clusters. I think the biggest is actually 6, but 4 is pretty close. And it can simulate this circuit. But if you took the same 4-qubit box cluster and instead of doing projective measurements, you did POVMs, you could simulate this much larger circuit. And so these would be what we call virtual qubits because they're virtually added by doing that POVM measurement. So as you can see, it makes a big difference in extending the power of your cluster if you only have small clusters like we can build in the lab. And this is actually very closely related to the experiment I performed. So we started with the smallest cluster, a 2-qubit cluster, which is just locally equivalent to a Bell state. And then by doing a POVM on it, we added another virtual qubit, and we can do this computation. You'll notice that, Hadamard rotation on Z, Hadamard is equivalent to rotation on X. And by starting with a plus state, rotating around Z by an arbitrary angle, and then around X by an arbitrary angle, you can prepare an arbitrary state. So it's just a simple 3-qubit cluster computation for state preparation. So to do this, we implement the POVM. And I want to explain what that POVM is. So you can write an arbitrary state in this way. That's just an arbitrary qubit state. The nice thing about writing it this way is that phi and theta are respectively the, that should actually be phi over 2 and phi over 2 in both of those places. But those are then respectively the polar angle and the azimuthal angle on the Bloch sphere. So your state just looks like that for some angle phi and theta. Now the POVM we implement is this, where our POVM is a rank 1 for outcome POVM. So the outcomes are just proportional to projectors, specifically to that initial state, or to X times that initial state, Y times that state, or Z times that state. So that's the POVM we implement in the lab. And here's how we do it. Some of my fonts aren't displaying right. The first thing to notice is that these two wave plates, we actually just use them to characterize our initial 2-photon state, our Bell state, or our 2-qubit cluster. So they're not important. But then here's how the POVM works. Consider putting in some arbitrary state that's a superposition of horizontal and vertical polarization. So I should have mentioned our qubits are initially entangled in polarization. Horizontal corresponds to 0 and vertical to 1. Now the first thing we do is we put it through what's called a calcite beam displacer. And that essentially adds another degree of freedom, which is the path. And it entangles the polarization with the path. So we now have that larger Hilbert space. Then by using this wave plate, we measure that we measure the polarization in a basis related to that angle phi. And then here we now have 4 modes, and both of these modes will be horizontally polarized, both of these will be vertically polarized. But then with these wave plates here and here, we rotate the polarization, flip the polarization in one mode in each arm, as shown, and then we bring it back together in a successive calcite beam displacer. So essentially this makes 2 coupled interferometers. But the point is that we have then mapped that path qubit of upper and lower path back into polarization after those second beam displacers. And then finally we do a measurement in a basis related to theta. And the end result of that is that the outcome here, that's where the light is transmitted at the first beam splitter and reflected at the second one, is just the state we're trying to create as a function of phi and theta. And then the other 3 outcomes are just related to that by a Pauli rotation. And here's how it actually looks like in the lab. You can see here's the little calcite beam displacers there and there and there. The rest of this just is wave plates. The photons come in here, and this is the 2 arms of the interferometer. And there you can see just where the various measurement outcomes are and where we set the angles phi and theta. Now, I briefly discuss how we get our entangled photons to begin with. I should mention that it's Denny Hamel, who's another student in our lab, who actually built this source, and I used it for the experiment. So we get our photons from PPKTP, which is just a fancy name for a special kind of nonlinear crystal in a polarization-based Sagnac interferometer. The nice thing about this source is it's really stable and puts out a lot of photons, photon pairs. The way it works is that you have a UV pump coming in, in this PPKTP, it has some chance to down-convert into one horizontal and one vertical photon. And so this PPKTP pump is pumped from both directions, but if the pump is horizontal, then what I just showed happens, you end up with a vertical photon here and a horizontal photon there. Whereas if the pump is vertical, you get photons in the other direction, and you end up with a horizontal photon here and a vertical over here. So if we pump it with a superposition of H and V, then we just get a psi minus state. And then actually, we don't want a psi minus state, we want a phi minus state for this experiment, but we can do that rotation in fibers pretty easily. And here's how it looks in the lab. And this is the measured density matrix of our two photon source. So we're trying to make a perfect Bell pair. We obviously don't have a perfect Bell pair, nothing's perfect in the lab, but we have a fidelity of 0.98, so it's pretty good. And then, so to correct those poly errors, to do that feed forward that you need for your cluster computation, or alternatively to correct for if you get one of the poly rotated outcomes of your POEM, we do that using Pockel cells, which are basically just ultra fast wave plates. So each one of these just flips the polarization, and there's the path that the beam goes. And I've sort of drawn what it looks like on the inside. There's a little crystal. This crystal, there's a voltage applied across it, a really high voltage, and when the voltage is applied, it changes the birefringence, or the difference between the index of refraction for horizontal and vertical polarization, and so it'll flip the polarization. And then we have some wave plates around it to compensate for if it's in slightly the wrong basis. The end result, for those of you who aren't experimentalists, is that it does an X gate. Or this one, we have put a Hadamard before it and after it, so it does a Z gate. And then the last thing you can see here is a set of wave plates and a beam splitter for doing state tomography at the end of our experiment. So here's what it looks like altogether, diagrammed. So these two photons come from the source. We do the POVM on one photon. Meanwhile, we have to store the other one in a quantum memory. Our quantum memory is really fancy. It's a big 50-meter loop of fiber. So while the photon's in the fiber, we do the measurement, and then depending on the outcome, either the X Pockel cell will be fired, the Z Pockel cell will be fired, or both will be fired to make a Y, or neither will be fired. And then, so that should allow us to prepare any state on this photon, and then we do state tomography to see how it worked. And that's the experiment. And so here's some results. What this represents, I prepared 206, so I did 206 different cluster computations corresponding to preparing 206 different pure states, or trying to. And then I took the fidelity between the state I was trying to prepare and the state I actually prepared and interpolated over the surface of the block sphere. So this just sort of maps how well our cluster computation works across the block sphere. And you can see it's up to 99.5% fidelity, as low as around 97, but mostly it's right in this range between 98 and 99. Yes? No, this is experimental results. I just took our experimental fidelity, the fidelity between our experimentally measured state that was tomographically reconstructed and our theoretically intended state. And this is the fidelity between those. And then I just interpolated over the blocks here. So this is results. So there is uncertainty from the tomographic reconstruction, yeah. Although we have really high count rates, so the uncertainties are going to be fairly low. And you can see that the
do you assume that your that the states prepared are all the same exactly, or they're prepared?
The state we prepare are all the same. I'm sorry, I don't quite understand the question. Yeah. So we measure for we do our tomography by integrating for 10 seconds over 6 different measurements, and during that time we get like tens of thousands of counts of trying to prepare the same state. Yeah, which seems to be a pretty good assumption. So what this shows here is based on the two photon state I showed you a few slides ago, the density matrix. I modeled what the outcome should be if the POVM and the feed forward were working perfectly, but based on that imperfect two-photon state. And this is shown on the same color scale, so it looks like this. So the fidelities, according to the model, should all be somewhere between 98.5 and 99. And then to get an estimate of sort of the error in my POVM, I took the fidelity between what I measured and the model, and then took 1 minus that fidelity as sort of an estimate of the error. And it's really small. It's 1.16 times 10 to the minus 3rd, 10 to the minus 3. So I was pretty happy with that. So now I want to talk quickly about how you could view this experiment also as remote state preparation. So Nathan gave the last talk about remote state preparation. I'll just try to really quickly review. Alice wants to prepare some pure states on Bob's side by sending Bob only classical information. That classical information should appear random to any eavesdropper in the middle, and she wants to send very little classical information. And that's remote state preparation. Theoretically, you can do remote state preparation with 50% success probability just by having a bell pair. Then you measure one bell pair and send a single bit to the other side that just tells whether it succeeded or not. So say I'd have HH plus VV measured onto the perpendicular of what I wanted to create, and then if I get the one outcome, then Bob should have the correct state. But that only, like I said, works only 50% of the time. Using this experiment, I can do it theoretically 100%. And as we discussed, that's assuming that Alice and Bob share entanglements. If they have no entanglement, like Nathan discussed, then we can come up with thresholds for what the achievable average fidelity is. And so the easiest kind of threshold to look at are the ones that correspond to platonic solids. And for those of you who might not have heard of platonic solids, you can think of it as Dungeons and Dragons dice. I'd assume that since we're a group of physicists, people have probably seen those before. So they're just regular polyhedra, and if those are inscribed in the block sphere, then their vertices are symmetrically spaced, which both means that there's lots of symmetries there, which means that the threshold is easier to calculate, and B, because the vectors are all as widely spaced as possible, the classical threshold is going to be a little lower, which makes it easier for me to beat it experimentally. So here's one example of what those intended vectors look like if you're trying to, say, prepare the cube, the vectors corresponding to the vertices of the cube. And then actually the blue here is my measured states. So you can see they're pretty close to the red states, which is what I was theoretically trying to achieve. And so here's the results. I know you've all been waiting for this. This here is Nathan's threshold calculation. So this number of states on the bottom, and this is the average fidelity threshold. The green line is for 2 classical bits. If you consider Alice to be sending Bob 2 C-bits. The blue line is for if you consider Alice to be sending Bob 3 C-bits. So obviously, with 2 bits, you can specify 4 states. So the tetrahedron is theoretically achievable with 100% fidelity either way. And actually, with 3 bits, you can specify up to 8 states. So the octahedron and the cube are also achievable with 100% fidelity for 3 states. But after that, the thresholds go down. And here's my experimental data up there. And the error bars are the standard deviation. And as you can see, for all cases where it's possible, where the threshold is less than 1, we beat the threshold by several standard deviations. Finally, I want to talk about how you can prepare mixed states. It's just a tiny modification. So this is the diagram I showed you before of the whole experiment. Remember that now we're considering the top to be Alice and the bottom to be Bob. So Alice controls everything except for Bob's particle cells, essentially. And all Alice has to do to prepare mixed states at Bob's side is input a veto signal so that probabilistically she sometimes doesn't send the signal to Bob telling him when to do the Pauli error correction. And the reason this works is because if you add up these 4 states with equal probability, you get the maximally mixed state. So if with some probability she sends the signal and we get some pure state, and then with some other probability she doesn't send the signal, you get the maximally mixed state, then what you'll end up with is some state along the direction of this pure state, but with a degree of mixture or a purity that's controllable by Alice. So we tried to make some mixed states. Here's showing just one state that I tried to make with purity one, or that's the ideal. That was my measured state when I tried to make it with purity one. When I tried to make a state along that same direction with purity 75, with purity 50, with purity 25%, and with purity 0%. And here's just shows also in a table form. So I measured the states corresponding to the vertices of the icosahedron and the dodecahedron with those intended purities, 1.75, 0.5, 0.25, and 0. And then this shows the mean fidelity for those states. And as you can see, the mean fidelities get progressively higher, well, except for at the very bottom. And that's because it's a lot easier to prepare mixed states than it is to prepare pure states, as Nathan was mentioning. So, in conclusion, you can use generalized measurements such as POVMs to extend the computing power of small clusters, especially that's especially useful for the kind of clusters that we can currently make in the lab. And we demonstrated a pretty high fidelity linear optical POVM device that can be used in cluster state quantum computing. And you can also view this as an experiment in remote state preparation, which is both deterministic modulo post-selection, meaning that it works more than 50% of the time. Theoretically, every time they have a coincidence, the state should have been correctly prepared. We showed violations of the thresholds that you can achieve without entanglement and the ability to prepare mixed states. That's it.
Good. So it seems like in the cluster state computing, you were preparing a single qubit state,
mm-hmm.
and you needed two physical qubits to do that.
Yes. So
can
if
you prepare any, like in optics, can you prepare a single qubit state with one qubit?
Yeah, preparing a single qubit state is really easy in optics, but not if you want to do it in the cluster model. And this is
okay. So you're just basically showing that you can do a cluster model. You're not.
Well, the thing is. So, let me go back to.
You see what I'm saying, though, right? Like, you use two qubits to make one.
Yeah, so it's. But preparing. So, the thing is this. Where am I? This.